I, Liberty, Chapter 11.
You might say it's really I, said the old man, and you might not. It's what's left of me at any rate.
Oh, that's right, it's you. Come into the moon so that I may see you. Piggott, you look like hell itself.
Aye, I live there.
He looked at the pistol and put it away.
It ain't loaded, but coo, ain't it got a nice loud cock?
It has that. Are you really a highwayman?
No, lad. Just wanted to see thee. And you're always more yourself when you're angry, ain't you?
Lance had not realized how angry he was until he was moved to laugh at this, and found it difficult. Well, by God, he said, in a resurgence of astonishment. Piggott, where have you been, Piggott?
Hop down, downtown, all around the square. Oh, lad, it doesn't matter. I gave up the carriage. Got a nice price for it, I did. Came to my sister's daughter for a while. Felt ill a bit, you know. The years go by. Just now, I'm up from Ickworth.
Ickworth? Something stirred at Lance's memory. He set it aside. He was going to speak, but was interrupted by a spasm of coughing. Deep, wrenching, sickly coughing, frightening to hear.
Touch of frost, said Piggott after a time. Might we move along, Lanky?
Yes, we'd better. Piggott, he demanded, why did you leave me?
It was what you wanted.
I never said that.
Do you recall that night, Lanky?
Of course I do.
Then do tell me what came about.
Why, I went to Blanton House. When I came out, you were gone. That is all. They rode in silence for a time. Piggott had nothing to say. At length, Lance blurted, You were deuced stubborn about something. I shall tell you that.
What was it?
Whatever it was, said Lance straightly, it was not worth you walking out when I needed you.
You can't remember, lad, can you?
If I can't, it's because it does not matter, and it didn't matter.
I remember. You had it in you that I'd betrayed you, made a gold sovereign to find your lodgings for yon trollop of Miss Chudley's.
Oh, yes. A long wait, while Piggott, lying face down in the saddle, coughed and coughed. And coughed. When he sat up again, showed his limp. Lance said, Someone told her.
I?
It wasn't you, then?
Told you so that night.
But dash it, I...
Nay, Lanky, say no more,
growled the old man.
I'm not here to make you sorry or humble. You're not, and you wouldn't be. That's just you, eh? As to the rights and wrongs of that special argument, we could have a truth till we broke it free, and us all tired and blue in the face would only find that argument had nothing to do with what happened. What I mean, if it hadn't been the Axelrod matter, it would have been something else. Your time had come, as I always knew it would. Your big step, though I'll admit I was slow to see it, thinking all along it'd be a Courtney matter, and not some little hanky-panky with Lib Chudley and her affairs. Anyhow, you had to reach a time when any Piggott was too much Piggott, and that was it. Thinking I'd betrayed you was a reason, but you'd no need of a real reason now, did you?
I'll not listen to this, Lance shouted. Why should I ever want to do that? Who fed me and clothed me from the cradle up? Who led me to the apprenticeship in the law? Who was my coachman and confidant and helpmate from the time I was born until that night in Holcombe? Who but you.
And there you give all the reasons why you had enough. You've a sniggling suspicion in you that part of your blood stinks of Bermondsey or worse, and when you saw you might move upward on anyway, you wanted nothing about you to remind me of it. And who but the old fool who done those things you listed could remind you more?
You've no right to speak to me that way.
I've a dead man's right,
said Pickett hollowly. Will you stop saying that? Are you trying to sound like Mr. Barrowbridge?
I know nothing of Barrowbridge. He disappeared out of Bermondsey years ago. As to my being a dead man, 'tis true enough, Lanky. Nay, I don't want your sympathy, and 'tisn't that I've come here for it. I know the signs. My ruddy lungs are gone, and I shan't last the bleeding winter.
Well then, what have you come for?
Lance had had very nearly enough of this disturbing conversation, and his tone showed it.
Let me ask you first, where do you stand just now on the matter of the Courtney title?
What business is it of...
Lance's voice was cut off by the old man's hoarse cry. It was a wordless statement of impatience, frustration, physical and emotional anguish, ending in a series of weak coughs, all that emptied lungs could yield up. For an appalling time, there was no inhalation at all. And at last, cautiously, a meticulous attempt to ward off a paroxysm. Lance was badly frightened by it. It was an unnerving thing to stand so close to the dying. When Pigott could speak again, it was only in a hoarse whisper.
Ye whelp, ye bandy words, and stand on your dignity, and excuse and delude yourself while I rot before your ruddy eyes. I've no time or patience to go and bawl with ye. I've that to tell ye which can mean your bloody fortune. Ye can hear me out, or leave me now and go back to your mucking little shed in the wilderness.
The man was outraged, and yes, certainly dying. Old, hurt, fevered, and finished.
Fortune? Asked Lance.
They plodded through the fitful moon shadows for a time while Pickett went through his careful series of shallow inhalations, persuading his lungs to bear with him just a little longer.
God help me, he gasped, but I don't care to finish what I've started.
Another long pause. It had grown colder, and their breath streamed like scarves back over their shoulders. Lance waited while Pickett struggled over something unseen.
"Now then,"
he said, more like his old self,
"will ye answer me?"
"Of course," said Lance gently.
"About the Courtney matter, then. How do you fare?"
"I've never lost sight of it," said Lance. "Yet it's not a simple thing, nor overly hopeful. I'd stand a better chance were I quietly and decently renowned for something, connected, well, and publicly respected. Also, I must wait on the death of Sir Foulkes Courtney. A harmless old gossip he is, but overly fond of genealogy. He cannot last much longer. In short, I progress, but slowly."
"And it remains our hope, and only that. Good, then, for did that seem a greater thing for ye than anything else? I might be silent now. Nay then, hearken. I'm just from Ickworth in Suffolk, and bear ye the tidings of the death of the Earl."
"What is that to me? That would be Bristol. No, no, I say!"
Lance yelped as his brain stopped feeling and began functioning.
"George William Hervey, eh? Which at long last gives Augustus John, Sir Cuckold, the title Elizabeth Chudley married him for, Earl of Bristol. Well, that's one she missed, and much good it does him to boot."
"Ah, wouldn't speak so of your da," said Pigott.
The moments of uncertainty in a human life are unaccountable as stars. Each moment of decision is a flicker with uncertainties, For consciousness itself is only the ability to choose between reactions under a stimulus. And that instant, before the instant of choice, is the very color of uncertainty. Be the choice wife or wine, war, wig, or wimple. The moments of utter and unalloyed certainty are correspondingly rare. They are unforgettable, epical, catastrophic, for they strike the consciousness with a bolt of substance disparate from life, energetic and unfamiliar. It was such a moment that Lance now experienced. He knew without knowing how he knew, that of all things in time he need not ask Piggott what it was he had just said. Peel by silken peel, he took down fact upon fact which lay about his thundering statement, separating it like a young spring onion. And at long, long last he spoke without conscious direction of his words, barely to be heard above the soft clump of the pacing horses and the whispering of the casual breeze through the frozen hedgerows.
"I," he breathed, "am a dirty son of a bitch."
"Ah, never that, lad. You've never been dirty."
Lance began to laugh. He laughed till he hurt. He laughed till he cried. He laughed until, literally, he could not sit on his horse. He slid off and hung by the saddle pouches, gasping. And in time it appeared he was weeping. He himself could not have said just what this retching, wrenching, wailing thing was when it wearied and left him. He, son and once lawful heir of Augustus John Hervey, just now turned Earl of Bristol. He, child of Elizabeth Chudleigh and her mad, hidden, poisonous marriage to a foolish boy. He, barrister's boy, trapped into manipulating that marriage into a nullity, into the very bastardy he had carried like a curse for all the years it did not exist. He, mountebank and impersonator, searching for a title by chicanery when he was born to one. He, who must, in filling in the details in this structure, learn more about himself, and who could not know how to prepare himself for any more such quakes, and yet who must.
"How long have you known?"
"All your life."
"I think you'd better tell me all of it," said Lance faintly.
He climbed back to the saddle, Piggott riding forward to assist, and then falling back to cough.
"There's little to tell. 'Twas in 43 I saw her first, at the Venetian ambassador's ball. Masquerade it was. Great, costly beast of an affair. I was footman at the time to my Lord Bath. He's a sticky old gout gate today, but he was a bounding billy of a youngster then, full of the devil, and a happy thing to come to any gathering. I used to make him laugh. We had a jolly sort of friendship, me keeping to my place, of course, but jolly for that. Anyway, me and the rest of the foot and coachmen were lounging about in the back kitchens, sopping up the fores and afters, you know, things a lord and ladies hadn't wanted and things you'd never see. When right in the middle of us, all up pops the young Earl of Bath. 'Begad,' he says, 'I've no right to do such a thing, but upon my soul I'll never forgive myself that I not let you see this.' And off he hauls me to the edge of the servant doors, where I might see out. And a good thing he did then, for 5 seconds later it was 4 deep, with every servant and staff in half of London, groom's boy up to upstairs maid. The ballroom was as grand as you please, a crawl with the highest nobility of England and her allies, where I was behind George himself. That's his present Mad Majesty's grandfather. He was on a great chair on a dais, no farther from me than yon poplar tree. And the young Earl, he gives me a great nudge in the ribs and a wink, and points with his thumb, and slips out into the pretty crowd. They was dressed like milkmaids, and heathen warriors and statuary and what not, but nobody was ever dressed like what I saw when I looked where he pointed. 'Gadsooks,' I cried out. but it is a saucy board. Aye, I couldn't help myself, and I'll take an oath the king heard me, but he paid it no mind, probably thinking me only a bishop or some such hanging about behind him. For there making an entrance was our Miss Chudley, bold as all innocence, and where all the mighty there was dressed up in their finest fantasy, she was dressed down in her barest fact. She had on a sweeping great skirt, that it as much as a gust of wind on a fine day, around her waist a bitty garland of flowers, and all the rest of her was dressed in white skin and pretty air. There was a thundering plague struck great hush, while those who could take their eyes off looked to the king to see what he'd make of it. He was getting old then, but he rose up to the occasion. Up he got, stood for her as I think he wouldn't do for a churchman, and began clapping his hands. So everyone else did, and I did too. Then it was while she was coming down the long lane the nobility opened for her, that the word buzzed back behind me, and the elp kept crowding, fit to squirt me into high society like a ruddy apple seed. I stopped applauding and hung under the doorframe with both hands and a leg, and watched her come to the dais and sink down in as pretty a dying swan deep curtsy as you'd want to see. The king asked her what she represents. I might have told him clear enough, but she said something of her own. "Iphigenia, your majesty," she says from the floor. "To this day I haven't found out what one of those is, but I'd like a pair of them for pets." Anyhow, down the steps his majesty, and raises her up, and hands her his great gobbin of a watch, and the ball goes on. Betimes I'm back in the scullery trying to press back me bulging eyeballs, all of 2 hours away, and still full of Iphigenia, when up pops my Lord Bath again. "Bigot," he says, "do you slip around to the west doorway and up on a covered carriage with the black pair you see there. I'll be out with a passenger for you. If we don't slip out quite like, every blood in London'll be upon us like a pack of dogs. Take her where she wants to go, and Pigot," he says, "mind your manners or you'll answer to me." I did as he bid, and I'm no sooner up on this fine black trap when out he comes with her, wrapped up in a gentleman's cloak, and pops her in, and off I go like a scrape-bottom sloof in a full gale. "Where to, my lady?" says I. And, "Oh," she sings, "anywhere, anywhere, and drive faster." So out we go, and up to Hampstead. "Aye, stay clear up there," and she shouts to me, "to drive out on the heath. Once out there, she must stop and leap out of the carriage, and run about in the moonlight, leaving the cloak and me treated to the sight a second time. Pigot alone granted what all the eyeborn had to share. She were half mad with excitement, what with her mad costume and the king's watch and all the dukes and earls snuffling at her like pigs at whey. Then she'd been snatched away at the very peak of things, and had left her drunk, in a drunker way than every brandy smote her body. 'Coachman,' she cries to me, 'coachman, dance with me,' and holds out her arms in the moonlight. And I did. It were cold out there on the dewy down, but her flesh were hot and dry, and she had sparks in her eyes. When I touched her first, I thought she'd faint, for she trembled all over, and fell against me, and her eyes rolled up like a dead man's for a moment. Aye, but I danced with her, mad it were, and with the last grain of sense left to me, I recalled what my lord had said about my manners, and scooped her up, and flung her back into the carriage, and hurried back to cobbled streets again. Betimes she thumped, and I peeked down at her, and she was swathed to the nose in the cloak again. 'Coachman,' she says, 'what's your name?' And I told her, 'Pigot.' She says, 'You've been good to me, better than I wanted you to be, and I must reward ye. What would she most like from me?' Now I must tell you, lad, that she had a bold and joking way about her, that you knew she could have a jollity and take one too, and before I knew what I was saying, I blurted out, 'To have a child of yours call me father, then I arise to say that failing that, I'd take a promise that she'd never tell a soul about this madness just now on the heath, lest we both find ourselves with a shirt full of bees. Beg it, she says, ye shall get your wish. I thought she meant my second wish, but 'twas the first she granted. Not 6 months later, there ye were, Lanky, my bucko, in the arms of the most surprised footman that ever drew breath or got a 3-minute visit at midnight from a veiled lady with a package. Aye, she was something to see in the old days.
The old days faded, and the voice faded, and the moon faded away behind a cloud. She was married then?
Aye, she was, and all a deep secret. She hadn't a farthing, and Augustus Irby had nothing but hopes and a pretty baby face. He was 4 years a junior, you know. After the ball, young Bath pulled the right ropes, and she found herself maid of honour in the ruddy retinue of Augusta, Princess of Wales. She had to keep her marriage secret to keep her job, you see. As for the babe, well...
But to just give it away to a footman who had made a choke...
That was her way, lad, and she didn't want you or need you. She, well, she didn't forget you, though. 'Twas her had me put you in with Barrowbridge. I couldn't say why. I think she had a run-in with him once. Might be she thought any child of hers would cut him down. Might be she thought to use you against him one day. He never knew it, I can tell you that.
You mean she saw you again and talked to you?
Never. 'Twas a foreign-looking chap came round with a message. I could do as she said or not, and if not I had a hint, I'd be thumped about accidental by 5 or 4 of this chap's friends. She had no need to threaten, but she did.
God, said Lance.
She uses everything she touches, boy, said Piggott. If she doesn't, she shall. Why, back in those early days when she was keeping her marriage so secret, and the secret leaked out, she used even that. She got rid of Hamilton by whispering it to him. He went abroad. She turned Bath into the surly knave he is today the same way. I don't doubt she knew everything about you, Lanky, the Courtney matter at all. I wouldn't doubt some of Barrowbridge's clients weren't clients at all. Eh? So you see, Miss Axelrood needn't have bribed anybody to find the dirty beast in you.
Piggott, have you any letters, papers, certificates, anything like that?
Nay, lad, she's too sly for that. But the new Earl might have some such. 'Twouldn't matter, could you get him to accept you. He's by no means a mighty man, but he's respected. He was commander-in-chief of the Mediterranean Fleet, you know, and vice-admiral of the Blue. Been MP out of Bury St. Albans for donkey's years. Writes a bit, they say, for the periodicals, and got himself genteelly notorious, you might say, for spitting in the eye of Rockingham. I mean to say, he's not the downy-cheeked silly ass he once was, not by a long shot. He's added to his own pittance, and now he's got the rest. All his brother Ad and Ickworth that belonged to the Irvies since the ruddy 15th century. There's a certain seat for St. Albans in Parliament for the Irvies of that line. All that's a hearty eight to jump from, eh? Were you to be next in line? Otherwise it all goes to the other brother, Frederick. Him that's a bishop in Ireland. And he don't need it. He's got packets.
Piggott, hush up a bit, or he'll start coughing again. I know my peers and peerage. I've got to think about this.
As you wish, laddie buck. Anyway, you carry your certificate with you. The Irvies is a breed apart. John Irvie, it was, tied his father to a bear and was hanged for something else. Frederick, they say, may be a bishop, but godless. That great old swine, Dr. Johnson, that everyone's kissing the ass of, once said, call a dog Hervey, and I will love him. And a great strange thing about hundreds of years of Irvies, 2 out of 3 marries an Elizabeth, even if she's married herself at the time. But one thing about 'em all, they looks like Irvies. Their accidents spring up throughout the running population, like corn lost in a field of daisies. You have the stamp, lad. You may take my word. I'll say that Irvy is blurred a bit by the Chudley, and given a choice, a stranger might say you were more Chudley than Irvy. But give him a chance to say you're both, and he'll agree you could be nothing else.
Oh, do shut up.
Aye, lad. I know Lib Chudley got herself some sly kind of divorcement, but surely that can't alter your fortunes. Seed is seed. Ah, now, she's got herself top of the heap, eh? Since the Duke died. Now there's a fortune could drop 3 Ickworths into the ruddy channel and never miss 'em. But who knows? Tides and changes in human beings what they are. For you to link the Kingston properties with the Bristol ain't so ruddy far-fetched as the idea of snaffling off a dead Devonshire title. I mind to...
Listen to me, snapped Lance as they rounded the bend of the brook approaching his footbridge. I want no more chattering and maundering out of you. I'm sick of listening to it. Do tell me one thing, and one thing only, though. Why didn't you tell me this years ago?
Go. You don't have to ask me such a question, and you don't have to jump salty at me, neither.
Never mind that. I'm asking you.
I'm telling it to you, Lanky, the very instant it can do you a penny's worth of good.
Who in the hell are you to decide what's good and what's not good for me? How do you know what I might have done years back, if I had known this, or what Barrowbridge might have done? Why didn't you tell me? Angry in his turn, Pickett wheezed.
Because, damn you, if I've to spell it out, ye don't, unless you must. Ye don't tell a child, nor a man, that his mother is a whore.
You tell this child, screamed Lance, smashing himself on the chest. He was so angry he drooled.
Damn you for interfering, you old pig! What did you keep me around for all those years? To dream you were the father of one of your betters? Did that make you feel like part of a gentleman instead of altogether a Bermondsey Fen rat? How do you excuse yourself for putting me out to slavery with Barrowbridge, when all the while I might have been in Harrow or abroad with a tutor, learning to speak like a gentleman from gentlemen instead of from some strumous old swine in the second story of a filthy warren? Aye, and sweeping! By God! He shouted. And chamber pots! Aye, Lanky, slide me on chamber pot! Then get thee out to Surrey, to some foreclosed manor land, and have a threadbare poacher teach you to shoot grouse like a gentleman, so that you'll know how an MP does it on the 12th of August. And all the while it might have been falconry for me, or fencing. Oh, God, Pigot! You'd have served me better had you sold me to the Tripolitanians as a bloody slave! What for? What for? Have you a slice of my mother's humour? Do you like to see a body squirm and suffer, while you alone know how far he has fallen, and you with a heel in his face? Why? Why? Did you dream that one day I'd be the master of great estates and fit you with a diamond collar and old brandy for the rest of your days? Oh, lad, no, no, say no more. I raised you for yourself, because I loved you, and I could not tell you that your mother was...
She's my mother. Let me be the judge of that, roared Lance. What of my mother? Where is my mother today? Where am I? And for this I'm to buy a pasture, and turn you out in it in your old age, for this knightly favour? Old man, I'd not give you a cup of water, not, by God, unless you were drowning.
Oh,
the old man breathed. He shook his head blindly, fumbled at his eyes with his hands.
Oh, I feared to do it. Oh, I feared this. Well then, Lanky, farewell, and God be with thee.
And the devil with you.
And he heeled his horse and bounded over the bridge, and never looked back. All night long they sat before the fire, Lance Captain Courtney, petty squire, Lancaster Higger Pigot, coachman's brat, Leinston, Hervey of Ickworth, I, Barry, St. Olms, and the Houses of Parliament, Chudley, Hervey, Libertine, sweeping up and down the continent in the grand manner, sampling sins. There they sat, one, the other, two of them, three, the lowly worshipping the highborn, and the highest utterly despising the rest. Back and back, round and back, and again he went. They went, circling, changing one with the others in a weary, angry Dakovaly. Then for a moment there would be a young man alone in a draughty hall, up for a bit of firewood to hurl it to the flames, at times glare furiously upward to a gimlet hole high in the wall. He would not go up there, not now. He plotted and planned and discarded and planned again, until fatigue sucked away a part of his sanity, and he began to have visions. Visions of the hunt, the masquerade, the pageantry of court. A vision of visions. His mother, young, clad in a transparent web, prostrating herself at his feet in a dying swan curtsy, and he confronting her with his full knowledge of her machinations, her huge laughter at the lad she had caused to bastardize himself. "You laughed, Amy lady. There's a laugh now. I'll have you sweeping for me, mother. Slide me yon chamber. Miss Axelrude, to hand me yon wee box of stinking salve that I may salute my dear mother." A great square man in Admiral's Court regalia, and the kneeling figure moans, "Augustus, Augustus, forgive me. Take all I've had, all I have." And the Admiral, "My son, my son, my long-lost son, take mine, take hers, take all." Lance shook himself awake, or not awake, for the fugue had not been sleep. He drew all the shades and shapes and colored lights of his fantasies down to a hard, bright, white point of fury, and, "Duchess," he said to himself with all his heart and mind, "you will pay me for this." At that point he was inspired. First he thought rapidly, "Leinston and the parish record, truly entered so that none can say it is not the clear genuine record of the marriage of Augustus John Hervey to Elizabeth Chudley, thence to the one higher body than the ecclesiastical court and its piddling jactation of marriage, to Parliament with the parish record, then what? Ah, then the Hervey marriage must still exist, and he, Lance, is legitimate again, and I, Elizabeth Chudley, is a bigamist. But the Duke is dead. No matter, no matter. The law concerned itself with the first husband, and he lived. It was bigamy, just for the act of marriage to the Duke of Kingston. But she is not in England, and may never be, he thought. Then the Parliament marks her as a fugitive, tries her in absentia, and since her second marriage is now nullity, she is no longer a duchess. Her properties fall to the crown, but that's not the place for such properties, out of reach. Then how? Ah, it was inspired. In the public interest, anyone might bring suit, but there was a man who had a special interest, a man who stood to inherit the Kingston properties, though not the title, not being de corpore suo. Evelyn Meadows, who ate out of his hand. He would bring suit. He had the right. He even had the duty. Lance leaned back and rubbed his hands together rapidly, a distinctive Betteridge gesture. Now then, what of the Bristol matter? What of his father, Augustus John Hervey, the new Earl? He, Lance, had forced Augustus Hervey into collusion and perjury in the jactation action. Could these not be used against him? But no, he did not know of Lance, could not know he was involved in the matter. The bigamy trial would make a laughing stock of this third Earl of Bristol. If he never found out that Lance had anything to do with either case, he could not blame him. If, in his disgrace from collusion and cuckoldry, perjury and persiflage, his young son appeared out of limbo to be at his side, to honour and comfort him, to give his declining years the son he had never had. And yes, he with the Hervey stamp on his features and the Chudley certification to blur it. As the old man had said, why, he couldn't fail. And Chudley, old, disgraced at last, Duchess no longer, Countess never, would sink away into the mire with her transparent costume as a winding sheet, and young Meadows would have the Kingston treasures, and could only be grateful. And he would marry Elaine, eldest daughter and heir of Sir Gregory Eustace, and in time add her fortune to the Bristol estates. And if he wanted something to do with his busy, clever mind thereafter, why not pursue the Courtney earldom as well? He laughed and clapped his hands together, rose and teetered happily on his toes at the window. It was snowing now, restfully, quietly. All's well with the world. Patterns of rime flaked the window light to show how cold it had become. The first dawn grayed the east and turned the hedgerows into steel-graved glyphs on the snow. It was cold. God, he cried, coming to his senses. Piggott! He flung on his heavy things and banged out of the house, round to the stables. He saddled, mounted, his hands, his mind a blur of eagerness and content with life. He galloped round the bowling green and over the footbridge and stopped a moment at the path. He wouldn't have gone up. There's only Minden. He'll have gone down, thought Lance, to the Tansfield Road. He spurred his horse. His blood sang in the cold air. His fatigue was gone with his hatred. He was alive and certain again, and he hadn't far to go. Pickett's horse stood athwart the path, tethered to a poplar, stamping and roomy with cold and inaction. Nearby, his back against the heavy hedge, sat Pigott. He was not lolling, nor lying, nor hunched, as a man might be when afraid. He sat with his feet apart, his hands on his knees, calmly waiting. His face was neither sad nor angry, nor was it content. It too was merely waiting, the face of a man of patience who knows not how long it may be before he is met. He was looking directly at Lance, and he was stone dead. Lance slipped off his horse and fell to his knees. Pigott! He cried in a great voice. It echoed and echoed away over the downs. God help me, what have I done? He moaned. And look, God, look what I've done! I've gone and killed my best witness!